Well, we continue working through the Westminster Shorter Catechism this evening. Tonight, we're going to look at questions and answers 12, 13, and 15. We won't be missing any, but I'm kind of grouping these together thematically in a way that I think is helpful. 12, 13, and 15, you can find these on page 968 in the back of your hymnal, 968 and 969. 12, 13, and then we'll turn over to the next page and question and answer 15. Question 12. What special act of providence did God exercise toward man in the estate wherein he was created? When God had created man, he entered into a covenant of life with him upon condition of perfect obedience, forbidding him to eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil upon pain of death. And question 13, did our first parents continue in the estate wherein they were created? Our first parents, being left to the freedom of their own will, fell from the estate wherein they were created by sinning against God. And then skip over to question 15. What was the sin whereby our first parents fell from the estate wherein they were created? The sin whereby our first parents fell from the estate wherein they were created was their eating the forbidden fruit. I have sometimes heard people say, why in the world was that such a big deal? Right? I mean, it's just eating the fruit of one tree. I can't understand why that's so bad. Let me try to illustrate what's behind our catechism by presenting something of an allegory about Genesis 2 and 3. Where we live, there are a number of mansions along Lake Mack. There's one probably no more than about a half mile from where we live that I watched as it was being built, I don't know, 5-6 years ago. And it was impressive to see it go up. It's got to be north of 10,000 square feet by any standard. It is truly a mansion. Not something an affluent person lives in, something a truly rich person lives in. Now imagine that I become friends with the owner. And he says to me, Chip, I want you to stay in my house this summer. I want you to care for it. I want you to enjoy it. I want you to live in my mansion as though it's yours. I want you to feel free to use all of it. The private beach, the swimming pool, the game room, my yacht, mi casa is su casa. And if you need anything, just go ahead and order it, put it on my account, and enjoy it. And by the way, I've got 10 bedrooms, and you can sleep in all of them except the master bedroom. Because my wife and I don't really like anyone to sleep in our bed. Otherwise, it's all yours. Imagine about a month passes, and I'm living it up. A doorbell rings, and there's a slick-looking salesman, a door-to-door guy, standing there on the porch. And the first thing he says to me is, wowza, is this here your house? And I said, no, not really. It belongs to a beloved friend, but I pretty much have the run of the place. And so he says to me, can you even sleep in the master bedroom? And I explained, no, that's the one room he told me not to use. And then just before Mr. Slick leaves, he says, some friend you have won't even let you use his master bedroom. That's probably because he wants to keep you in your place and doesn't want you to imagine what it would be like for you to be the owner of this house. And so I began to think, yeah, why is it I can't stand in that room? If in that room as well, if he's really my friend and he really wants me to enjoy myself, he'd let me sleep in any room I want. So that night I say, to my friend, and I go right ahead and sleep in the master bedroom. And guess who shows up? The owner of the house. And he's furious. And he tells me I'm a louse, that I've abused his friendship, and I've demonstrated I'm no friend at all, and he kicks me out of his mansion. I don't think anyone would say, well, your friend's a total tyrant. He's overreacting. All you did was sleep in that one room. You wouldn't say that because my actions would be clear. I acted as an ungrateful, unappreciative, and altogether rebellious friend. And I trust as reasonable people who know Genesis 2 and 3, you can follow that analogy. God made a covenant of friendship or entered into a covenant of life with Adam. And he'd given Adam everything in the garden. It was paradise. It was his to enjoy. And there was only one thing God told him not to eat. And it was from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And God warned him, if you broke this covenant arrangement, the penalty would be death. And Adam ate it anyway. And when he did, Adam essentially said, your goodness means nothing to me. Your generosity means nothing to me. And I don't want to be in a covenant of friendship with you. It's a big deal. He rebelled against God. Now, in the next couple of weeks, the Catechism will provide us a helpful definition of sin, almost an anatomy of sin, really. And the Catechism will go on to explain how Adam's sin impacted the whole rest of the world. But what's astonishing is that God looked down at rebel Adam and the rebel sons of Adam and said, I want you to move back in my mansion. Only not as a guest, as sons and daughters and heirs. And I want to be in a covenant of friendship with you forever. And so I'm going to send my only begotten son to fully and finally secure an unbreakable relationship with you. That's the wonder of the gospel. And that's where the Catechism is taking us. Well, for now, let's continue praising our God as we prepare to go to Him in prayer. We're going to stand to sing, number 524.